Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs certified to Congress that their electronic health records were finally interoperable after years of work, and that was 3 months ago. Lawmakers aren't satisfied with that assertion. As Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu reports, they're looking for more clarity on what interoperability actually means.
With some degree of fanfare, the two departments jointly certified that they had met a requirement Congress put in place in 2014 that all of their respective health data be interoperable with one another's IT systems. The assertion was based on DoD and VA's successful implementation of the Joint Legacy Viewer, a read-only web application that lets VA doctors and claims administrators see a veteran's DoD records. As of this month, JLV has nearly 200,000 users. But several Senate appropriators said Wednesday that the functionality offered by JLV fell far short of Congress's actual intent. Senator Mark Kirk is the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Military Construction and Veterans Affairs.
I will read to you the Webster's definition of interoperability. Interoperability is the ability of a system to work with and use another system. In the case of the Joint Legacy Viewer, which is kind of a kludgy band-aid that we have over, when I talked to Cerner, they told me it does not provide the X-ray data of patients. So we would say now, welcome to the VA. We have no X-ray data on you from all the X-rays the Navy, the Army, Air Force did for you. I think most members of this committee would say that is not interoperable. I would say that you expect some further definition from this committee on that point, that we need to move forward on this point to make sure that there is no net burden on the soldier or sailor when they come out of the service.
Aside from the fact that the current version of JLV is currently text only, Kirk says the system is inadequate in that it lacks any ability to perform data analytics on the vast trove of health data the two departments are now sharing. Those types of analytics could be used, for example, to identify soldiers and veterans who may be at risk for suicide.
I understand from the press we had the suicide hotline had not enough responses for people. And one of my constituents had called in and also committed suicide after they called back. That the exciting thing for what Cerner told me was they had an algorithm could predict suicide likelihood. And what I understand, when I talked to Cerner, they said the Joint Legacy Viewer cannot do analytics like this. This critical upgrade in suicide prevention we are not capable of doing with this Joint Legacy Viewer.
Congress also sees a more robust exchange of interoperable data as one way to speed up the processing of veterans' disability claims. About 11,000 workers in the Veterans Benefits Administration now have access to JLV to help them make decisions on disability ratings. But John Tester, the committee's ranking Democrat, says the system is inadequate to that task if it only offers a partial view of a veteran's military health history.
What we're trying to solve here is not have to rewrite the book again, so that quite frankly where the person was hurt, how the person was hurt, the x-rays, the CAT scans, all that, all would be on there, so that when a veteran's going to get rated, it would be a much easier process and it wouldn't take forever and it wouldn't be like a very complicated math problem. It would be right there, and the information has to be there. And it's interesting that you would say that the notes are more important than the pictures. I'm not a doctor, but do you ever do a surgery and not look at pictures of the x-rays and that kind of stuff? I mean, you just start cutting based on notes?
VA officials say they intend to begin rolling out the capability to share imagery within a patient's medical record in September as part of an upgrade to JLV. But the two departments decided to start the data sharing initiative with 24 domains of standardized textual content, mostly because of bandwidth reasons. And as to images like x-rays and CAT scans, the information they're sharing already includes a radiologist analysis at the time they were taken, says David Waltman, a senior advisor to VA's Undersecretary for Health.
And as we know, the size of data for the studies themselves is exponentially larger than the reports.
So if we had a veteran who had a spot on his lung indicating cancer, the Joint Legacy Viewer would not share that with the VA, so VA wouldn't know about that emerging cancerous situation. Is that correct?
So there would be a radiology report from the study that was done identifying the spot, and that report is available today.
This is a narrative thing you're saying.
That's correct.
I'm actually talking about the imagery.
Right. So the
most people would think that a medical record includes x-rays that they had taken when they're in the service.
Yes, and that is certainly part of the medical record. And the report that the radiologist completes after such imaging studies are done are what other providers typically use to address findings from those reports and follow their course of care. That said, we're working and in the process now of delivering the image viewer component of the Joint Legacy Viewer, which will be available in the next release. And now the challenge there is to make sure that we have the bandwidth and ability to exchange the images when they're needed to be exchanged for clinical purposes.
VA is also working on a follow-on project to JLV known as the Enterprise Health Management Platform, expected to be up and running midway through 2018. Waltman told Senator Tester that the eHemp program will expand JLV beyond a simple viewer of static records, letting clinicians add their own notes, enter new orders for medications, and view images taken by another department.
We need a integrated capability of all of the clinical data, the process management for managing clinical pathways, clinical workflows, integrated with analytics which can use algorithms such as described by the chairman, which can predict based on the information in the record, based on pathways and courses of action available, what interventions should be taken and what the processes and care pathways should be.
So when we have this hearing in July 15th of 2018, you're going to be totally inoperable. You're going to absolutely, there's going to be no gaps. The system is going to work.
So I would like to give a yes or no answer to that question, but I can't. What I can tell you is that we will have the ability to incorporate all of the information between the departments, to use it, process with the type of algorithms that are being discussed. But I can't say that every use case that we may have identified for use of interoperable data we'll use.
eHemp will replace the computerized patient record system, the software module VA clinicians have been using to read and write patient records since the mid-1990s. CPRS is in turn a part of VA's larger electronic health record system, VISTA, which the department plans to eventually abandon and replace with a new health record infrastructure to last the next 25 years. That forthcoming system, called for now the Digital Health Platform, is still in the early planning stages. Laverne Council is VA's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology.
The reality for us as we talk about EHR and VISTA in particular is that there are new capabilities that have to be added. We're not able to move fast enough and did not move fast enough to keep it up to speed to where it needs to be, and that's why we're talking about a new platform called the Digital Health Platform.
Council says the DHP will be an agile system of systems that relies on open source technology and shuns proprietary data standards. She says it will also apply a new approach to data management, taking into consideration all of the information VA houses on veterans, not just electronic health records, and replacing an estimated 138 regional variations of VISTA with a single centrally managed IT platform.
Remember, there's much more to the veteran than just their health care. It is their benefits. It's their ability to use our national cemetery system, is all the things they have right to in their education, and we've got to do a much better job of creating that seamlessness. One capability, one solution, and everybody has to come to it. Because the fact is that 130 is what makes it slow, it makes it cumbersome, it makes it take a long time, and it makes it inconsistent. Moving to an open architecture that allows APIs to come in, allows us to use that information, share it, and get it back out, and do it in a much more seamless area is where we want to go with DHP.
Since DOD and VA decided to part ways on a previous effort to build a single shared electronic health record system 3 years ago, DHP would still be a VA-only system, even if it's capable of ingesting DOD's data without any hiccups. Lawmakers are still unhappy with that decision, and the Government Accountability Office says the two departments have yet to present any justification that it was the right decision. Valerie Melvin is GAO's Director for Information Management and Technology Resources.
VA's plan to modernize VISTA raises concerns about duplication with DOD's system acquisition. The departments have identified 10 areas in which they have common healthcare business needs, and a study has identified over 97% of inpatient requirements for electronic health record systems as being common to both departments. Despite our recommending that it do so, VA has yet to substantiate its claim that modernizing VISTA, together with DOD acquiring a new system, can be achieved faster and at less cost than a single joint system. Thus, an important question remains as to how VA and DOD can continue to justify the need for separate systems. Finally, while VA has begun implementing VISTA modernization plans, it is doing so amid uncertainty about its approach. Thus, with regard to VA's electronic health record interoperability and system modernization efforts, uncertainty and important questions remain about what the department is prepared to accomplish, in what time frames, and at what cost.
Jared Serbu, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin. Worldwide defense spending is on the rise, mainly because nations other than the United States are boosting theirs. That's the assessment from Deloitte in its annual performance study. Joining me with more, retired Air Force General Chuck Wald, Vice Chairman and Senior Advisor at Deloitte. It seems like the biggest threat now that we know of on land is Russia, not so much to the United States, but to our interests and to nations that we are interested in allies. To what extent is Russian activity driving what some of the countries, say, in Eastern Europe are spending?
Well, that's a great point. If you look at the spectrum of potential conflict, it goes all the way down from an individual all the way back up to nuclear warfare. Nuclear warfare is still there. The threat of it's still there. The requirement to have deterrence is still there. Almost put that in a separate category of importance. It's something you just can't fail at. You have to pay attention to. But on the conventional side, large landmass warfare or large warfare country to country, all the way down to individual terrorism type activity, is now the spectrum. And ironically, I think many of us had hoped for and maybe wished for that a large conventional nation-on-nation, alliance-on-alliance type warfare had gone away after the Cold War. And here we are, as you point out, with Russia in Eastern Europe and in the Ukraine and Crimea, now again threatening the alliance of NATO. And you'll see, as you have noted, NATO now is going to increase their number of troops in the Baltics by around 4,000. They've increased the presence of armor. They've had increased their air presence, their surveillance presence. And Russia has put three divisions of Russian troops on their side of the border. So although I don't think any of us would bet we're going to have large international conventional warfare here tomorrow, you never know how these things play out from the standpoint of unintended consequences and unpredictability. And I would contend that probably in the history, nobody's ever really predicted the actual beginning of a real tough conflict of some sort or what precipitated that. In retrospect, it's obvious, but we're not ahead of it. So what I'm getting at here is we're probably going to have to be hedge our bets, continue to support NATO in a large way, be a part of NATO, obviously, but with our troop presence, the cost of that will increase in Eastern Europe. NATO is going to have to play their part, and that will continue. And then you add China in the South China Sea with the Spratly Islands and our alliances with Japan and Korea. We're going to have to continue to pay attention there. North Korea firing off potential nuclear warhead missiles in the future out there that could reach some of our bases in Guam and all the way, obviously, to Japan very easily. That's a huge threat. And then you add the instability around the world that we see every day on TV of extremism and terrorism. We're probably in a more complex world right now than any other time, say, since World War II, where obviously global war is a lot different. But this is probably the most turbulent, volatile time we've lived in.
So it seems like perhaps the biggest threat to the balance, such that it is, that exists now, would be maybe a major mistake by somebody in these flyovers where the buzzing of aircraft carriers and destroyers and planes coming close to one another. If somebody decides to shoot back, for example, that could change everything overnight.
No, absolutely. I think you just hit the nail on the head. Is the unpredictable, volatile nature of the world we live in. And I'm not sure what the analogy might be, but to put forces next to each other, even though I don't have my gut feel is Russia does not want to necessarily invade NATO right now, obviously, but they're showing their you know, their fangs a little bit in Eastern Europe. But the unpredictable nature of that close contact, if you will, and unintended consequences is the danger. And so, again, from a military person's perspective, you have to be prepared for not the most likely necessarily, but the potentially likely, but high-risk activity. And so do I think we're going to be in a large major war with Russia in the near term? My bet would be no, but based on your point, we don't know for sure. And we can't miss that bet, so we have to at least hedge against it and put our troops out there, which is costly. And again, it's kind of counterintuitive because it causes potential friction just by being there. But it's there. Same thing in the South China Sea. And then you go add on the fact that we have this extremist problem, mainly in the Middle East, but also in Africa, and now in our NATO countries, and obviously here in the United States from a what looks like a lone wolf type activity. But those activities continue. And so I see the need for continued defense spending, for continued international cooperation, and for continued creative R&D, research and development by our defense industry, and it's going to continue for the foreseeable future.
We're speaking with retired Air Force General Chuck Wald, Vice Chairman and Senior Advisor at Deloitte. And finally, if you would interpret the meaning, because there are a lot of interpretations out there, between the fact that the spending levels of the USA versus China and Russia. Russia, $84 billion, China, $216 billion, the United States, if you include the OCO, $610 billion.
Right.
What does that mean in terms of throw power?
Well, I think that is a really good point and question, and I talk about it all the time. I mean, the United States is, you know, we don't like to say it because it makes us not look not humble, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. But we are the big boys on the block. We're the most influential nation in the world. We do the majority of world policing, if you will. And $600 billion is probably more than the next, as you point out, four or five top countries in the world on defense spending. Matter of fact, our intelligence spending probably rates in the top three or four defense budgets in the world by itself. So it tells me that the U.S. defense industry and global industry, looking at the U.S. defense market, there's still a lot there and will continue to be. China, though, and Russia, for that matter, are right there in the top five, and they continue. Now, the difference, I would say, that you need to put in perspective is that China and Russia, primarily China, but Russia to a certain extent, even though they've been deployed to Syria recently and have some activity, obviously, in the Ukraine eastern area, but mostly are not deployed. China particularly, they work out of their own backyard. Deployments cost a lot of money. They're tough on equipment, they're tough on people, and it costs a lot of operational and maintenance money on a daily basis. So a lot of our spending is put into deployments around the world, which, again, you can argue whether you like that or not. I would argue that we are a global power and we need to act like it. But it gives China and Russia somewhat of an advantage that they're not spending money on these deployments. So the difference in the spending is a little bit skewed, but still, the U.S. is way up there and needs to be, I would say, for the foreseeable future.
Plus the salaries and the benefits and the health care costs, housing costs of U.S. troops and the civilian infrastructure that supports them is probably a lot more per person than it would be in China or Russia also.
Well, absolutely. I would say two things. One is that's true. We have an all-volunteer force, and you have to pay people that are talented to stay. It's competitive. We're competing with the private commercial economy as well, number one. Number two is I would argue I don't think there's any argument, the United States has the most talented, the most capable personnel, military personnel, in the world. I mean, I've been all over the world, deployed, seen all of the militaries, and there's nothing that compares to the U.S. military. So that takes training, equipment, it takes competitive talent recruitment and maintenance and maintaining talent. But it's costly. And if you look at the health care requirements, a lot of that has to do with the casualties we've incurred over the last 15 years or so in the Middle East. We're committed to our troops after, during, and after conflict, and we'll take care of them for the rest of their lives. That's costly. There's nothing like U.S. military medical care. I've never seen anything like it in my life from the standpoint of the technology in the field. That costs money. And but we're not going to back away from that. So as you point out, our costs are a little different than, say, the rest of the world from the standpoint of what we're putting the money in. But we're still, from a equipment standpoint, we're still putting money in very, very, very good equipment. So I think our U.S. defense capability is second to none. There's nothing that comes close, and we're going to have to continue to do that. Now, again, economies and demands around the world continue to press for that military spending, but I see the United States staying at the level you just pointed out for the foreseeable future.
Retired Air Force General Chuck Wald is Vice Chairman and Senior Advisor at Deloitte. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.